Hey, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that people with money and fame are perfect and have everything together and everything in their life goes amazingly?
Well, yeah, it just makes sense.
I wasn't expecting you to say that.
Oh, you are listening to the 100 Huntley Street podcast with your hosts, Cheryl Weber and Mark Masri. And we're so glad you've joined us today. You know, our theme today is loss of faith. We're talking to a very, very successful recording artist, Lecrae. And he has got a pretty fascinating story. I mean, at first glance, you might think he has it or had it all together.
Well, you know, this whole our whole culture is driving toward like fame. You know, they're 15 seconds, money, status.
The
success.
Instagram life that we live, right? Everything's been airbrushed. Everything looks perfect.
Yes.
We're all vacationing in very exotic locations, eating gourmet meals. And driving fancy cars.
And I know everybody was laughing at that statement that I said, but there is a part of us somewhere where we do think that people that achieve success are happier or their lives are better than ours in some way. And we're always surprised when we find out that secretly they're living a life of quiet desperation. And I, you know, honestly, I knew that Lecrae had been suffering a lot of blowback from the Christian church when he tried to speak out about racism or some social issues. And I knew that he was feeling really disillusioned by that because I follow him on social and I'd seen that. But I really had no idea like what he was truly facing.
Yeah. A fascinating story. Heartbreaking story, actually. A victim of sexual and physical abuse as a child. Grew up without a father at home. And there was a certain amount of baggage that he carried throughout life with that being in his past. Really had an interesting early conversion to faith in Jesus Christ, but kind of went about it from a theological sort of an intellectual standpoint for many, many years, sort of in this quest, this thirst for information and theology. And it didn't quite make that 18-inch journey from his head to his heart. And all the while he's dealing with depression, anxiety. Anyways, we don't want to tell you too much more of his story, but a fascinating artist, so well spoken. I mean, just an incredible advocate for mental health awareness. He really has become a great voice for that. And just amazing story. So Cheryl, I think maybe we should just get into it. Let Lecrae tell his own story. What do you say?
Okay, so here's two-time Grammy Award winner, Lecrae, with Mark Masri.
Well, after millions of records sold, two Grammys, and collaborations with the who's who in today's music industry, my guest was on the top of the world until the buried trauma of his unhealed wounds brought on a debilitating depression that would cause him to question his faith, his family, and his future. I'm talking about hip-hop artist and best-selling author Lecrae, and he's inspired millions with his redemptive and gut-honest art and joins me to talk about his latest book, I Am Restored, How I Lost My Religion But Found My Faith. Welcome, Lecrae.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have you, my friend. In order for us to understand where you are today, I think we have to go back to the beginning. Can you tell us what life was like for young boy Lecrae?
Yeah. You know, I would say that I had a pretty enjoyable childhood that was interrupted by some traumatic circumstances. I loved having fun. I loved, you know, doing all the typical things that most kids did. But, you know, there were some elements that were missing that created some problems. One of those elements, obviously, was my father being in my life. Just not having that positive male figure created some problems for me. And then you add some of the abuses and neglect that I experienced, sexual abuse, physical abuse. That was traumatic. You know, that created some problems that I had to figure out how to navigate as a young boy. And, it obviously created a little bit of a delinquency stage in my life.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we attribute chaos in our lives to poor decisions we have made or the crazy world in which we live. And you can identify with that as so many can. But what did you discover was a source of grief in your life that so many of us fail to acknowledge?
Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot of it is just buried issues, buried trauma, buried things that you're not thinking about and that creep up and don't allow you the ability or the coping skills or the decision-making skills to recognize how detrimental your decisions are. And you know, when all you've known is divorce and you weather through it as a kid, you don't realize how it could affect your own family if that's the decision that you make. And so there's just little things like that that we bury and we haven't fully recognized.
So even through all that trauma that you experienced as a young man, you had a relatively early come to Jesus experience, if you will, in life. But you describe that your hunger for theology, or what you talk about as sound doctrine, almost became an obsession for you. It became an issue of pride. What can you tell us was missing from your faith experience that issue of pride or that obsession with theology left, that void that was left?
Yeah, well, you know, when you feel as if all you need is the correct information, then you don't need the relationship. And so if I think I know everything I need to know about my wife, it'd be foolish to say I don't need to hang out with her. I know everything there is to know about her. I don't need to spend time with her. And so you begin to just find your value, your worth in the information that you have and not in the relationship that you have. And so that was huge for me.
I love how you so tenderly and affectionately refer to your grandmother in the book, and the impact that she had on your life. What can you say her relationship with Jesus did for you?
Oh, my grandmother's relationship with Jesus was everything. That was the first person that I saw with the relationship with Jesus. That was the first person that ever tried to, you know, talk to me about God, that introduced me to scriptures or Bible or anything along those lines. So without her influence, I honestly don't know where I'm at today. She was foundational for me.
It's powerful. Okay, I want to quote from your book here, Lecrae. You said, "I was privately depressed by the crisis of my faith, disillusioned to the point of questioning everything. I was pressured on every side, and on top of everything, I didn't believe in God anymore." Wow. Tell us about that boiling point where you decided maybe you should walk away from it all. Because you'd had a lot of trauma leading, you were sort of regurgitating a lot of the trauma that you had been through, that perhaps you'd suppressed for so long. What was that boiling point that caused you to really question everything?
You know, I think it was, it's a culmination. You know, obviously when I began to speak out about social and racial issues, there was a lot of backlash, and there was a lot of pushback from Christians, people that I trusted, people that I thought loved me. And it wasn't a conversation. It was just a dismissal. And I think that pain led me to a place of saying, well, if this is how your people act, are you even real? And so that pain just pushed me to that dark place. And that was an opportunity, I feel like, for Satan to just take advantage of me. And there were certain books that I began to read. There were certain things that I began to process that would speak to me intellectually, but were pushing me further away from believing that God was real. And I think once I hit that boiling point of just disappointment and everything going on around me, I was just tired. And, you know, obviously I stopped trusting in God, but God did not stop being real. I may not have believed in him, but he believed in me, and he was still consistent with his character and his faithfulness.
And I love you mentioned that God wasn't finished with you, and he was persistent with you. There was a turning point in this crisis of faith, if you will. I mean, it was a crisis all around in your life. It was a 360 crisis. You were battling with addiction and all these sorts of things. What was the turning point for you? I mean, I understand like an Eastern Orthodox priest showed up at one of your shows. I mean, you'd ask God, you know, to reveal himself to you, to kind of write it in the sky for you. And you had this really interesting visitor at one of your shows.
Yeah. That was pretty crazy. I remember saying, I'm done with God. And then I remember trying to do some research and some studies and trying to figure out about this Eastern Orthodox thing. And I was like, is this God? Is this who your people are? Like, and I remember just kind of like talking in my bed at the ceiling and, you know, thinking, oh, I'm talking to God. And then I had a show the next day and someone said, hey, this guy wants to meet you. And I was like, oh, okay, who is it? And he's like, oh, he's with a friend of yours. And in walks this Eastern Orthodox priest. And I was like, all right, that's too much of a crazy coincidence. It's almost like God was trying to say, if you want me, I'm here. Just, you know, I'm going to show up around every corner. You know what I mean? And that's what God does. You know, he'll send a talking donkey if he has to, you know,
he's whatever he has to do, whatever he has to do. I love it. In what? Okay. So yes, God was definitely part of the equation for you, but you also realized that there was going to be a bit of hard work that was going to have to go into it in terms of therapy and counseling. In what new ways did God show himself to you through that hard work of therapy and counseling? Because that's a very important part of many people's journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think on one hand, he helped me to realize that that this faith walk is integrated. It's not just spiritual, it's spiritual, mental, and emotional. David writes those Psalms because he's in an emotionally dark place. You know, Elijah's depressed and wants to take his own life at one point in time. And so God wants to be integrated in all of those aspects. And so it's just as it is important for us to have leaders in our lives who can help us interpret the truth in scriptures. We need leaders in our lives who can help us interpret what's happening with us mentally and emotionally. It's no different than having a primary care doctor for your body or your heart. Your mind, your brain is a part of your body. And so God just showed me that this is going to be a process, but I'm going to walk with you through this process. And he was faithful.
He was. And I strongly recommend our viewers get their hands on a copy of your book, because there's so much that you unpack in this book on your faith journey. We can only skim the surface here, Lecrae. You talk about the profound impact that community has had on you when walking through the journey and being honest about, you know, the sexual abuse, the physical trauma, the addiction, the depression. Talk to us a bit about community and the importance of having a tribe, if you will, come around you that help you on that road to recovery.
Yeah, community is everything. If you don't have friends who can walk with you, then you're trying to process everything on your own and you're just not strong enough. You know, it reminds me of the story in the scriptures where, you know, Moses is having to pray with his hands up for Joshua to win this battle. And he needs Aaron and Hur on each side to hold up his arms. Yep. And we need people to hold us up when we're going through tough times. So my suggestion to everyone would be to find some great friends. You've got to find a community that you can trust to face you, not just to fix you, but to face you, to say, listen, I'm walking with you no matter how ugly this gets. And I may not have all the answers, but I'll be here with you.
Lecrae, just in the last few minutes we have here together, talk to someone that's in despair. They feel like they're at the bottom of the pit. There is no way out. What would you say to that person today?
Yeah, my encouragement would be first and foremost that you're never too far gone for God to do some restorative work. As a matter of fact, he loves to restore. That's one of the things that he says over and over again. You've got to hold God to his promises, and he doesn't break his promises. He's always faithful. You know, when we look at Jeremiah 29:11, he says, I know the plans that I have for you, plans for a future and a hope. And he's telling that to some people who are in despair. It's really, really bad for them. But he tells them to continue pressing forward because he's got control of this. And so the last thing I would say is, as a Christian, I believe the tomb is empty. And if the tomb is empty and death is defeated, that means everything that comes along with it is defeated as well, even the circumstances, the problems that you're facing. So you may not be able to change your situation, but you can be changed through your situation and in your situation. And God will be there the whole time.
Wow, I love that. The tomb is empty. Well, thanks, Lecrae. Listen, I know we could stand and talk here for another 20 minutes about all the depths of God's love revealed to you through this book. I would encourage our viewers to go out and get a copy of it. It will change your life. It's changed my life. You are such a powerful reminder that success doesn't erase our painful past, and that God is in the business of walking us through our healing journey, regardless of what that may look like. Thank you for being with us, Lecrae, and I can't wait to see what God has in store for you in the things to come.
Thanks.
Mark, that was such a great conversation. I so admire Lecrae for just being so vulnerable and honest. And, you know, one thing that really struck me, and it's interesting, that the idea that he had this buried trauma that he didn't even realize and he wasn't dealing with, and how it started causing this depression and this whole thing in his life that he didn't want to happen. And I've heard this, that if you bury things when you're young, when you start getting in closer to middle age, that a lot of times people will start suffering from depression or physical ailments. And a lot of it has to do with stuff that they haven't faced, that they tried to stuff down. And it's so frustrating, because you kind of hope that if you just stuff it down and lock it away and put it in its box, that it will stay there. why doesn't it stay there, Mark?
I know. I mean, that's the thing, right? Where our bodies, our emotional beings are always trying to be whole, I think. I think we're always in search, whether intentional or not, to try and be complete and not live fractured lives or fractured existences or damaged lives, if you will. So it's no surprise that at some point in your life, that's going to come back to the surface. And you can understand why so many people, I mean, I'm sure at some point or another, all of us, I know I can certainly say it's true for me, there have been seasons in my life where I'm just trying to sort of keep things down, not really talk about maybe a struggle that I'm having or whatever, because I'm like, if they ever knew I'm damaged goods, they would never hire me for a gig, or they would never, I mean, they wouldn't never talk to me again, or, that opportunity, forget that, that's never going to happen because of X, Y, or Z. And these are the lies that we tell ourselves. And it's almost a protective measure. I think we're trying to a defense mechanism that perhaps is built into us. But the sooner we realize that when we allow those things to come to the surface, and we talk about this a lot, Cheryl, is putting things in the light. Mm-hmm. They can do a lot more damage. You talk about this too, like mushrooms grow in the dark. And mushrooms are pretty fungusy.
They taste good though, but they do taste good. Not pretty.
But that's right. You know, and those things fester and grow in the dark, and it's almost like bacteria, and it festers. Mm-hmm. When we bring it into the light, then we can address it. And Lecrae was brave enough to bring it into the light and seek counseling and get the help that he needed. You know, and he says community was such a big part, continues to be a big part of his healthy emotional spiritual life, having people around you that you can trust.
And what I love, like the title of the book that this interview is based on, I Am Restored, How I Lost My Religion But Found My Faith. I think the more that you see people get legalistic and rule driven and kind of like beating people over the head, like the Bible says that, you know, kind of to me, that's kind of a symptom of the idea that we are more about religion and enforcing religion than mm-hmm. true relationship with God. And the relationship is the hard part, whether it's marriage, friendship, being a parent, like that, like being in relationship, in that intimacy and the struggle and the honesty and the failure and the disappointment, that's the messy stuff of life that sometimes it's just easier to step back from.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about a relationship with a God who's perfect, and you have to come before him with all your imperfections and failures and areas that you feel you fall short. Well, then our default is kind of to pull back and then maybe just read the Bible and do all the right things, but not really have that deep friendship. And there's this verse in the Bible, it talks about this whole story where he's separating the sheep and the goats. And one of the things he says to people that he, you know, says, no, you're not going to come into heaven is they're like, well, what do you mean? You know, we've healed the sick. We've done all this stuff. We've helped the poor. And he's like, but I didn't know you.
Mm.
He doesn't say you didn't know me. He says, I didn't know you.
Mm.
So there is something about walking with God that is about opening up our hearts and our lives to intimacy, to messiness. And I think, honestly, in my own life, that a lot of the freedom that I've experienced has been inviting God in and letting him love me when I feel like I'm not doing it all right.
Mm-hmm.
Like letting him love me in my failure and my mess and all the list of things. And I have a list. I don't know if you do, Mark, but I have a list of like, I should pray more. I should be doing this. Why did I do that? Like, you know what I mean? I should spend more time ministering to my neighbors or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I have that list, but when I take that list to God and I just open up my life and I say, you know, here I am, like not doing it all right, kind of a mess, or messed up over here, grumpy with that person over there, whatever the things are that I feel so disappointed in. And I just like come boldly, the Bible says, to the throne of grace. And I just say, you know, here I am, like I'm your daughter and I'm here with you. And I just let him love me. That is actually so transformational. And that is when you start making the shift from like servant to daughter or son, right? I'm not just your servant. Yeah. You tell me what to do and I do it. But now I'm like actually part of the family.
Yeah. Yeah. Grafted into the family. And I know you were just talking about son or daughter. I was just going to say, you know, we only have one child, Lucas, and he's off to university now. But when he was a baby, you know, into his toddler years, well, throughout all of his, you know, his childhood with us at home, there are times when he messes up, like we all mess up. That's just part of our human existence. but especially as a toddler, as a baby, we didn't expect Lucas to clean himself up if he had created a mess. You know, we reach down, scoop him up, and we clean him off. You know, that's our job. That's the Heavenly Father's job for us, to pick us up out of our mess, relocate us, put us down, get us all cleaned up, and then set us on our way. And so often, you know, if you've been going through life feeling like you've got to get it all cleaned up and put together in order for God to love you, that is the, if there's one lie that I can dispel today in your life, in your walk, in your journey, regardless of what you believe, is that you're not good enough for God to love you, please stop believing that right now. It is not true. It is simply not true. In fact, God loved you so much, loves you so much, that he was willing to send his son Jesus to die on a cruel cross, so that all you have to do is say, God, I believe in you. God, I believe in you. I'm a mess. I've messed up time and time again, but I need you. I believe in you. You'll have everlasting life. He'll set you on the right path. And it's a journey, but it's a journey with Jesus, and that makes all the difference.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Mark. And hey, if you want someone to pray that prayer with you, if you don't really know exactly what to do, we would love and be so honored to be that person to pray with you. We have prayer partners available 24 hours a day, middle of the night, Christmas Day. They are there to answer the phone. The loveliest people you will ever meet. That number is 1-866-273-4444.
You've been listening to the Huntley Street Podcast with Cheryl Weber and Mark Masri. And we hope you've been encouraged today, inspired. And we just love being able to come into your car, your AirPods, whatever device you're listening to us on day in and day out, be able to share the life-transforming power of Jesus Christ. God bless you until the next time.
Thank you for your ongoing support of Crossroads, a supporter-funded nonprofit organization and member of the Canadian Center of Christian Charities. Thanks to faithful people like you, we are able to continue producing 100 Huntley Street. You can write to Crossroads, P.O. Box 5100, Burlington, Ontario, L7R4M2, or visit crossroads.ca to learn more about our programs.